Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM, Descanso. We hope all of you had a wonderful 4th of July weekend. The Healthy California Act, the universal health care measure in the state legislature, has been killed for this year, and we'll tell you who pulled the plug on today's show. Next up, hear why some Jamul residents are speaking out with concerns over traffic accidents on Highway 94 and a rise in driving under the influence since the new casino opened, and why the tribe says the blame lies with Caltrans. On Crime Beat, we'll tell you about a drive-by shooting in Spring Valley that injured an Uber driver. We'll also have details on a state Supreme Court ruling that's been hailed as a victory by the National Rifle Association for Gun Rights and a disappointment for gun control advocates. Hear about an impeachment march that was held in San Diego. And then on Capitol Report, learn who was affected by the Supreme Court's decision to temporarily reinstate part of Donald Trump's travel ban. Then on Destination East County, we'll tell you about all the most fun festivals and events coming up, including parades, star parties, family hikes, outdoor concerts, and a blues and barbecue night. On the second half of our show today, our newsmaker interview is with Eric Lund. Many of you know him as the president of the San Diego East County Chamber of Commerce, but he's also heading up the new East County Regional Task Force on the Homeless. He'll tell you about some big ideas that the task force is proposing to cities in East County and to the County of San Diego to help homeless people across our region. So stay tuned for all of these stories on today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters.
This is Gene Carpenter with a health report. Assembly Speaker Anthony Rendon has pulled the plug on the Healthy California Act, or Senate Bill 562, which would have provided free universal health care to all Californians. Rendon, who has claimed to support single-payer health care, said the bill was fatally flawed, including serious issues such as financing, delivery of care, cost controls, or the realities of needed action by the Trump administration and voters to make SB 562 a genuine piece of legislation. In light of this, I have decided SB 562 will remain in the Assembly Rules Committee until further notice. That means it won't come up for a vote by the full Assembly this year, though Rendon left open the possibility for the state Senate to revise and revive the measure next year in the second part of the two-year session. He wants to see the Senate fill in holes to address financing, delivery of care, and cost control. Critics slammed Rendon's decision, which came just 2 days after the U.S. Senate unveiled its health care reform proposal to repeal the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare, and impose deep cuts in Medicare and Medicaid funding. A similar version in the House of Representatives would result in 23 million Americans losing health care, according to the nonpartisan Congressional Budget Office, making the situation dire in the view of those advocating for SB 562, which would have begun protecting Californians' health care in January 2018 if it had passed. Vermont Senator and former presidential candidate Bernie Sanders voiced disappointment that Rendon refused to allow the bill to come to the Assembly floor for a vote, adding, "At a time when the United States is the only major country on earth not to guarantee health care for all, and when tens of millions of Americans are uninsured or underinsured because of outrageously high costs, California has the opportunity to lead this nation in a very different health care direction. If the great state of California has the courage to take on the greed of the insurance companies and the drug companies, the rest of the country will follow." The bill would have replaced health insurance companies with government-run health care. If it had passed, the measure would have provided all Californians with not only free medical care, but also free dental, vision care, mental health services, chiropractic care, and more. A recent poll found that 70% of Californians support universal health care. Chuck Idelson, spokesman for the California Nurses Association, which sponsored the Healthy California Act, noted that the insurance industry has poured massive massive amounts of money in efforts to defeat the bill. He questions Speaker Rendon's motives. Whose interest is he acting on if not the insurance industry and those who oppose having guaranteed health care? Idelson asks. The key sticking point, and its major one, is that the bill was passed by both the Assembly and Senate without detailing how it would pay the measure's hefty $400 billion price tag. Republicans opposed the measure, noting that the cost was higher than the entire state budget. That's true, but it's also an oversimplification of the situation. So could California afford universal health care without risking bankrupting the state, as Republicans have claimed passage of the bill could do? Robert Polin wrote in a Los Angeles Times editorial that a study he conducted at the University of Massachusetts, commissioned by the California Nurses Association, found that enacting a single-payer system would yield considerable cost savings for California overall by lowering administrative costs, controlling the price of pharmaceuticals and fees for physicians and hospitals, reducing unnecessary treatments, and expanding preventive care. We found that Healthy California could ultimately result in a savings of about 18%, bringing healthcare spending to about $331 billion, or 8% less than the current $370 billion. Much of that is money that the state and federal government are already paying, though it's unclear how much of the federal share may be slashed. That leaves $106 billion as a known gap that would have to be covered. One idea to do that would be two new taxes, though for most individuals, small and medium-sized businesses, the costs would likely be less for the taxes than they are currently paying for health insurance and health care. One tax would be a 2.3% tax on larger businesses, with exemptions on the first $2 million in revenue. Small businesses, 80% of all California companies, would pay nothing, and mid-sized businesses would pay less than 1%. However, even for larger businesses, the tax would be less than they currently pay if they are providing health care benefits for workers. The second tax proposed is a 2.3% sales tax increase, though housing, utilities, groceries, and certain other necessities would be exempted and there would be help for low-income families. Most middle-income families spend between 2.6 and 9.1% of their income on health care, so even with the new tax, they would likely wind up saving money under the proposed plan, according to Pollock. But even some supporters of universal health care have been squeamish about backing a measure where the primary analysis showing a cost saving was funded by the bill's sponsors. Perhaps a more independent analysis funded by the legislature itself would be a good place for the state Senate to start. There are still big ifs even under the rosiest scenario. The biggest wild card is what the federal government will do and how deeply any repeal and replace Obamacare measure would affect California, if approved in reconciliation form by both houses of Congress and signed by President Donald Trump. The proposed U.S. Senate plan, as drafted, hits seniors hardest, who could pay five times more in premiums than younger people, takes away guaranteed protection for pre-existing conditions, phases out Medicaid expansion, and deeply cuts Medicare, forcing states to make tough choices on either scaling back the number of people covered or dropping reimbursement for doctors even lower. Others whose coverage will shrink or potentially disappear under the Senate Republicans' plan include pregnant women, half of whom give birth under Medicare, and the disabled who rely on Medicare coverage. But for now, with Assembly Speaker Rendon pulling the plug on the Healthy California Act, our state's residents may be left at the mercy, or lack of mercy, of the federal government. Advocates of universal health care aren't giving up, however. Some have vowed to fund primary opponents to run against Democrats who oppose the Healthy California Act, with Rendon at the top of their list of targets. There is also talk of a ballot initiative that would take the decision about universal health care directly to the people. Senator Tony Atkins of San Diego, who co-authored the bill along with fellow Democrat Richard Lara, voiced disappointment but said, "The issue is not going away, and millions of Californians are counting on their elected leaders to protect the health of their families and communities."
Supervisor Diane Jacob held a press conference with Hamul residents last Friday to voice concerns over accidents on State Route 94 since opening of the Hollywood Casino in Hamul last October. The group also called for completion of roadway improvements promised by Caltrans, most of which have not yet begun. The Hamul Indian Village has issued a response contending that the casino is being unfairly blamed for an uptick in accidents that may be related to other factors and points a finger at Caltrans for delays that the tribe says is due to Caltrans lacking land use authority for the roadway improvements. Supervisor Jacobs said there is clear and convincing evidence that Highway 94 has become significantly more dangerous since the casino opened. According to the California Highway Patrol, during the 8 months from early October through May, 99 collisions occurred along the 11-mile section of highway. That's more than the average 92 collisions for an entire year on average during the last 5 years. However, that claim, while true, ignores the fact that in 2015, there were 136 collisions, so the rate had actually spiked a year before the casino opened. The past 8 months did include 13 accidents caused by drivers under the influence, and that's up from 6 or 7 a year in 2014 and 2015, the years before the casino opened. That's a hefty increase. However, it's unclear how many of the recent DUI drivers, if any, consumed alcohol at the casino. Hummel Indian Village Chairwoman Erica Pinto says it's preposterous to blame the tribe for all of the accidents on the 11-mile stretch of roadway, adding, there is no discussion about the new wineries and other businesses that serve alcohol in the area. She further notes that, per the CHP report, the increase in alcohol-related accidents and arrests began several years before the casino opened, spiking, as we mentioned, in 2014 and 15. Our casino cannot be blamed for this trend, she says, and she notes, as the longest residents of East County San Diego, the Hummel Indian Village is deeply concerned about the safety of our neighbors, as well as casino visitors. The tribe has committed over $120 million to improve public safety, including new fire trucks and $23 million slated for roadway improvements. Now, both sides do agree on one point. Regardless of the cause of the many accidents on Highway 94, roadway improvements are needed to help reduce the number of crashes and injuries. Jacob blames Caltrans for allowing the casino to open and issuing encroachment permits without completing traffic improvements that were promised, including new signals, turn lanes, retaining walls, and more. And she does note that even before the casino opened, the highway was among the most dangerous in the region. To date, of 6 intersections along Highway 94 that were slated for improvements when the casino was approved to open, only one has been completed, and that's the area in front of the casino. Construction has not yet begun on 5 more. Jacob says she has mailed a letter to Caltrans local director Lori Berman asking her to block access to the casino until all of those safety improvements are completed. And she also faulted the Alcohol Beverage Control Board for allowing the Hummel Casino to be the first in the state granted a temporary alcohol permit immediately upon opening. Kim Hamilton, editor of the Deerhorn Valley Antler and the Antler Alerts, says the highway is an old stagecoach route that remains very narrow, with no shoulders and, in places, power lines running just a few feet off the road. Recently, a car struck a power pole near the casino, causing a brush fire and roadway closures. Residents have voiced concerns over their primary evacuation route being blocked in the event of a major fire. The principal at nearby Steel Canyon High School has voiced concern over the safety of students, families, and staff on the highway. Chairwoman Pinto says that despite the tribe setting aside money for highway upgrades, Caltrans has been delayed because it does not have land use authority needed to make the long-promised roadway improvements, and she also faulted Supervisor Jacob for not doing enough to facilitate matters with Caltrans. In a letter responding to concerns raised by Supervisor Jacob in August of 2016, Caltrans set goals for improvements to be initiated or completed before now, but they have not begun. The agency pointed blame at the county and residents for, quote, seeking to impede the tribe's effort to acquire the right-of-ways to build the traffic mitigation measures needed. East County Magazine is reaching out to Caltrans to learn just what it will take to get the highway improvements done and make the roadway safer for residents as well as tribal members and casino patrons. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
This is East County Magazine's Crime Beat. On the streets, reporting on crimes impacting communities across our region, helping to keep you safe and informed.
This is Rebecca Williamson with a Crime Beat report. The Sheriff's Department is investigating a shooting in Spring Valley on July 1st that sent the driver of a white Ford Focus to the hospital with multiple gunshot wounds. The vehicle had bullet holes in the passenger door, windows, and fender, according to Sergeant Scott Roller, who said the crime is being investigated as a possible vehicle-to-vehicle shooting. A witness reported that after seeing the vehicle riddled with bullets near the intersection of Hamishaw Road and Gillespie Drive, he used the driver's phone to talk with a 911 dispatcher and applied pressure to the victim's wounds until emergency personnel arrived. The witness said the man was an Uber driver, and a TV news crew from Fox confirmed that the vehicle had an Uber sticker on it. The shooting occurred in broad daylight with children playing nearby, according to NBC7, which reported that a second driver told them his vehicle was also struck. If you have any information on this crime, please contact the San Diego Sheriff's Department.
Gun rights groups have scored a victory in California's Southern District Court, where Judge Robert Benitez granted a preliminary injunction to temporarily block part of Proposition 63, which required Californians to dispose of large-capacity ammunition magazines by July 1st or face fines and potentially jail time. Plaintiffs in the case include gun owners from the San Diego area, as well as the California Rifle and Pistol Association, the National Rifle Association's affiliate in California. Voters passed the gun control initiative with 63% approval after the deadly San Bernardino terrorist attacks. The initiative bans possession of magazines that can hold over 10 rounds of ammunition. Sales of such large capacity magazines has been illegal since 2000, but possession of existing large capacity ammo magazines purchased before then was allowed, a situation Prop 63 aimed to remedy. Some law enforcement agencies report that despite the new law, few people have turned in the banned magazines, opting to hold on to it in hopes that litigation will overturn the ban, the Los Angeles Times reports. Judge Benitez wrote that without the injunction, hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of otherwise law-abiding citizens will have an untenable choice: become an outlaw or dispossess oneself of lawfully acquired property. However, a separate court in the Eastern District of California earlier denied a similar motion in a second lawsuit. The case before Judge Benitez argues that the ban violates the Constitution's Second Amendment right to bear arms, as well as protections against having property seized without due process or compensation. In the lawsuit, the NRA argues banning magazines over 10 rounds is no more likely to reduce criminal abuse of guns than banning automobiles. But California Attorney General Javier Becerra disputes that contention. Proposition 63 aims to prevent further mass atrocities caused by those in possession of large-capacity magazines and seeking to do harm. He says, in recent years, large-capacity magazines have been used in mass shootings across the country. Those include the Pulse nightclub in Florida last year, where 49 people died, the San Bernardino shooting in 2015, where 14 people were killed, and the Sandy Hook Elementary School massacre in Connecticut, where 20 children and 6 adults lost their lives. Many more were also injured in those mass shootings. California's Attorney General notes, each of these horrific incidents were made more traumatic by the existence and use of large-capacity magazines. Studies have further concluded that when large-capacity magazines are used, the average number of people shot is 2.5 times higher, and the average number of people killed is over 60% higher, he notes. Restricting large-capacity magazines and preventing them from ending up in the wrong hands is critical for the well-being of our communities, Attorney General Becerra concludes, adding, I will defend the will of California voters because we cannot continue to lose innocent lives due to gun violence. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Gene Carpenter.
Approximately 1,500 to 2,000 San Diegans held a march and rallies downtown over the holiday weekend calling for the impeachment of President Donald Trump. Those favoring impeachment cited concerns ranging from racism to allegations that the Trump campaign colluded with Russia to hack the election. A much smaller group of about 36 counter-protesters tried to disrupt the impeachment rally with their own music and chants. Some of the pro-Trump counter-protesters dressed to intimidate, wearing flak jackets and helmets. A heavy law enforcement presence was on hand, but did not interfere with either side's free speech endeavors. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Miriam Raftery. This is East County Magazine's Capitol Report, bringing you the latest news and newsmakers from our nation's capital.
The U.S. Supreme Court has issued a temporary order reinstating part of Donald Trump's travel ban that was previously halted by multiple appellate courts. The temporary order is in place until the High Court hears the case in the fall and issues a ruling. The decision allows immigration to continue from six Muslim nations, Iran, Libya, Somalia, Sudan, Syria, and Yemen, but only for people with a bona fide relationship to the United States. The definition of such a relationship or ties is not spelled out, but legal experts generally agree that travelers with close family members in the U.S., jobs or job offers here, and students at American universities will be protected. It is unclear whether others, such as those with medical conditions seeking treatment here, would be banned or not. Visitors who don't have ties here would be barred from getting visas to come to America. Hardest hit would be refugees fleeing violence, whose hopes of a brighter future in America will now be dashed unless they already have family or other ties in the U.S., international aid groups warn. Oxfam, an international nonprofit helping refugees, issued a statement that warns, "This decision impedes refugees from seeking resettlement in the U.S. It targets vulnerable people seeking safety after fleeing unfathomable violence and loss." The statement continues, "If the ban is implemented, it could put the lives of tens of thousands of people at risk worldwide and pose a threat to our humanitarian mission." In Syria alone, 11 million people have been forced to abandon their homes due to civil war and bombings by outside countries, while millions more are still suffering inside Syria, many in need of medical treatment, Oxfam observes. This case affects all refugees, no matter their country of origin, leaving many confused, frustrated, and scared. Trump, however, called the Supreme Court's action a clear victory for our national security, adding, "As president, I cannot allow people into our country who want to do us harm." But that logic is tenuous in the case of refugees, since no refugees since 9/11 has been found to have participated in any terror attack in the U.S., where vetting procedures are already rigid compared to Europe, where many refugees simply poured across borders or entered via rafts across the Mediterranean Sea. With an ocean separating the U.S. from the Middle East, intense screening procedures and background checks offer added layers of protection. While no system is foolproof, the fact is that the vast majority of terror attacks on U.S. soil have been perpetrated by white Christian Americans or U.S.-born converts to radical Islamic beliefs. Lower courts had blocked the president's executive order, finding it discriminated based on religion, violating the Constitution. Although the Supreme Court is expected to hear the full case this fall, justices indicated that they expect their order, which was approved unanimously 9-0, will give the administration ample time to complete its review of vetting procedures. The court has also asked the Justice Department whether the High Court's consideration of the case in the fall might be moot if the vetting review is completed and potentially the ban lifted. The Trump administration could also ask the court to revise the ban or to extend it permanently. Three conservative justices, Clarence Thomas, Samuel Alito, and Neil Gorsuch, would have allowed the entire ban to take effect as Trump issued it, including barring those with ties to the U.S. Thomas wrote that the compromise could lead to a flood of litigation over what constitutes a bona fide relationship to the U.S. Indeed, the state of Hawaii already has asked the Supreme Court for clarification on just what constitutes a close family relationship to allow entry into the U.S. After the court's ruling, the Trump administration crafted a narrow definition that excludes some family members, such as grandparents and grandchildren, as well as fiancés of U.S. citizens. The Trump administration guidelines also exclude refugees with sponsors and a guaranteed place to live in the U.S., a situation Hawaii hopes to see changed. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Gene Carpenter.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.
Welcome to Destination East County with your hosts, Rebecca Williamson
and Jonathan Getz, bringing you the top festivals, events, and attractions across East County
each week. This week's Destination East County includes the Descanso Days Parade and Festival, a star party and family campout in Lakeside, a hike up Vulcan Mountain in Julian, Radical Reptiles in Rancho San Diego, a falconry demonstration in Julian, a concert by Sarah Petit at the Ramona Library, Blues and Barbecue Night in Santee.
Plus, we'll have a preview of coming attractions, including Cal Fire Family Day at Lake Morena, Astronomy Night on Mount Helix, a family hike plus falcons and hawks in the Santa Isabel Preserve, superstars Lionel Richie and Mariah Carey in concert at San Diego State University, a murder mystery dinner theater in Julian, the Pine Valley Days Parade and Festivities, the Julian Apple Pie Grand Prix, and the Pomerado Brass Quintet in concert at Mission Trails.
So stay tuned for all of these events and many more.
Red, White, and Moo will be the theme of this year's Descanso Days Parade and Fair on July 8th. Parade entries will be judged on Best of Theme, Most Creative, and Judge's Choice. The parade starts on Viejas Grade and ends at the elementary school. The festival will be held at the Descanso Town Hall in Descanso. Be sure to arrive early since roads close for the parade starting at 9 a.m. on July 8th. For more information, you can visit descansotownhall.org.
Oak Oasis County Preserve in Lakeside invites you to a star party and family campout on Saturday, July 8th from 7 to 9 p.m. Members of the San Diego Astronomy Association will be on hand for an evening of stargazing in the preserve. Arrive in the parking lot at sunset for a twilight hike to search for bats and scorpions, plus enjoy starry night stories and hot chocolate. For more information, call 619-561-0580.
You're invited to meet Master Falconer Cisco and his raptors at William Heiss County Park in Julian on July 8th from 3 to 5 p.m. You'll learn about these large birds of prey and watch a live flight demonstration. You can visit the William Heiss County Park website for directions and more information. And Heiss is spelled H-E-I-S-E.
Rancher Doug will lead you up a hike on the summit atop Vulcan Mountain in Julian on Saturday, July 8th from 8 a.m. to 11:30 a.m., where you can see amazing views of San Diego County and beyond. From the summit, Doug will take you into areas that are normally off-limits to the public so you can see more of this incredible natural habitat. Come prepared for hot weather and bring plenty of water. Vulcan Mountain County Preserve is located at 1209 Farmer Road in Julian.
Children and parents are invited to a Radical Reptiles and Friends presentation at the Rancho San Diego Library in El Cajon. This event will be Tuesday, July 11th from 4 to 4:45 p.m. Guests will see a variety of bugs, insects, and reptiles.
The City of Santee presents Blues and a Barbecue Night on Thursday, July 13th from 5:30 to 8:30 p.m. at Town Center Park East in Santee. It's all part of the city's summer concert series. The Community Blues and Barbecue Night includes a beer garden and barbecue, as well as performances by Whitney Shea and the Robin Hinkle Band at 5:30, followed by the Bill McGee Blues Band at 7 p.m.
Sarah Petit will perform Americana, folk, and bluegrass music on Thursday, July 13th at 6 p.m. at the Ramona Library. It's all part of the County Library System's Acoustic Showcase series. For details on concerts and other library events, you can visit the San Diego County Library website at sdcl.org.
Now for a preview of coming attractions.
You're invited to Cal Fire Family Day on Saturday, July 15th at Lake Morena County Park in Campo from 10 a.m. to 11 a.m. You can explore a fire engine and learn how to be fire safe, plus watch a fire hose in action. Wear comfortable shoes and meet in the overflow parking lot. For more information, you can call the Lake Morena County Park at 619-579-4101 or visit the park's Facebook page.
Mount Helix Park is partnering with the San Diego Astronomy Association to host Astronomy Night atop Mount Helix on Saturday, July 15th from 8:30 to 10:30 p.m. Bring your telescope or witness the cosmos through one provided by members of the San Diego Astronomy Association who will be on site to help you interpret the night sky. Feel free to bring a picnic dinner and enjoy a spectacular sunset prior to stargazing.
You can join Ranger Eric in a short beginner's trek through the Santa Isabel East County Preserve in Julian to learn essentials for a successful hike. This Introduction to Family Hiking will be held on Saturday, July 22nd from 4 to 6:30 p.m. Learn what to wear, pack, eat, and drink before and during your hike. For more information, you can call the Santa Isabel East County Preserve at 760-765-4098.
Learn about the world's oldest hunting style and sport of kings from Master Falconer Cisco Seaborn on Sunday, July 23rd from 4 to 5 p.m. at the Santa Isabel East County Preserve. Visitors will experience the world's fastest animal, the peregrine falcon, in action as he swoops down to allure. Bring a hat, water, and sunscreen to this event at the West Preserve, which meets in the staging area. For more information, call 760-765-4908.
Music superstars Lionel Richie and Mariah Carey will rock the night at the Viejas Arena at San Diego State University on July 27th at 7 p.m. as part of their All the Hits tour. Richie has won an Oscar, 4 Grammy Awards, and 16 American Music Association Awards, among many other honors. Mariah Carey is the best-selling female artist of all time. Carey has won 5 Grammy Awards, 9 American Music Awards, and the World Music Award for World's Best-Selling Female Artist of the Millennium. Tickets are available at the Viejas Arena website.
The Julian Triangle Club invites you to help solve a hilarious crime at a murder mystery theater set for Friday night, July 28th from 5:30 p.m. to 9 p.m. at the historic Julian Town Hall. Dinner will be catered by Jeremy's on the Hill. A well-seasoned county fair opens under a cloud as a real estate tycoon plots to buy it out and close it down. This riles the locals who love the fair, especially the pig races, which are being targeted by protesters. Add in female country singers who will stop at nothing to claw past each other to get to the top. Plus, some romancing, and you have the stage set for shenanigans and murder. The table that gives the best correct answer of who done it before the killer is revealed will walk away with a stellar prize basket. For tickets or details, contact the Julian Triangle Club at 760-525-5137.
Pine Valley Days takes place July 28th and 29th. This annual tradition begins on Friday with a deep pit barbecue and live music by Barb Wire. Then on Saturday, July 29th, the Pine Valley Days Parade rolls out through the town, followed by a day of fun festivities in the Pine Valley Park, including kids' activities, arts and crafts, vendors, live music, food, and a horseshoe tournament. For details, you can check the Pine Valley Days 2017 page on Facebook.
The Julian Apple Pie Grand Prix will be held on Saturday, July 29th from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. This year's vintage sports car show, parade, and festival is a salute to the sports cars of Great Britain. Cars will be on display on Main Street from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m., followed by a parade of these vintage cars that will proceed to Mangini Winery for a public viewing and festival until 5 p.m. The festival will feature live music, plus food, beer, and wine available for purchase. The Julian Apple Pie Grand Prix is organized by the Julian Classic Motoring Society and the Julian Chamber of Commerce. Find details at julianca.com.
The Pomerado Brass Quintet will perform a public concert at Mission Trails Regional Park on Sunday, July 30th at 3 p.m. in the Outdoor Amphitheater. The Brass Quintet's repertoire includes classical, marches, jazz, ragtime, Dixieland, and Broadway musical selections. For more information, you can visit the Mission Trails Regional Park website at mtrp.org.
That's all for this week.
If you have an event you'd like added to our calendar, or if you would like to sponsor the Destination East County column on our website, or the Destination East County show here on KNSJ Radio, you can contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org. Destination East County is the most read feature on our website.
We'll be back next week with more festivals, events, and attractions in San Diego's East County.
See you around, East County.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso in the heart of San Diego's East County.
The East County Magazine show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interests, not special interests. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. Now stay tuned for part two of the East County Magazine radio show. Now, straight from the headlines, bringing you our latest top newsmakers. This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine show on KNSJ, 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at our studio in East County. Today, my very special guest is Eric Lund. Many of you know him as the president of the San Diego East County Chamber of Commerce, but Eric is also heading up the brand new East County Homeless Task Force, and he's going to be talking about that on today's show. Eric, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Miriam. It's nice to be here.
Well, it's our pleasure. Can you start by telling us What prompted the formation of this task force?
Yeah, it's a great question. The San Diego East County Homeless Task Force was basically created because of the need. People have long identified that homelessness is one of the key issues that really impacts their businesses, their lifestyle, everyday life. You know, everybody comes into contact with homeless folks, and it really does have an impact on the quality of life in the region. So the chamber formed the San Diego East County Homeless Task Force at the direction of the board of directors, and they made that one of their goals in this new strategic plan that they've developed.
Very good. How many homeless people are there in East County now, according to the last point in time, homeless count done in January, do you know?
So in the East County, which includes Santee, Lemon Grove, El Cajon, and La Mesa, as well as some of the unincorporated cities like Alpine and Rancho San Diego, we figure there's about 1,000 people who are homeless that are out in the public places.
And how many of those are without shelter?
Probably out of that, about 700 are without shelter.
And the rest are in some kind of a temporary shelter for the homeless.
Exactly. And there's about 300 that are in transitional housing right now. Mm-hmm. So there's quite a few there.
It's also been increasing, correct?
It has been. Our homeless problem throughout San Diego County has really substantially jumped this past year.
So your task force has come up with a list of ideas. The first city that you're approaching about this is El Cajon. Now, as we're taping this, listeners, it's the week before the 4th of July, and probably by the time this airs, the El Cajon City Council will have acted on this, and I understand it's likely they're going to approve the plan that you're hearing about, but there will be similar plans put forward for our other cities in the region, and we'll be talking about all of that.
As well as the county.
As well as the county. Very good. Eric, I'm just going to go through some of the bullet points on this, and I'll let you explain how these things work. Some of them deal with housing. Some of them deal with other more immediate needs of the homeless, such as you've got a proposal for mobile showers. How would that work?
So mobile showers are just that. They have propane tanks and holding tanks to hold the water that comes out of the showers or out of the restrooms. And basically, it's a portable shower that can be taken from site to site and allows about 30 showers total.
Very nice.
That's what the tank can hold. There are 3 showers and a couple of potties inside of it. And it allows people to get cleaned up and have a shower when oftentimes they haven't had a shower for weeks and weeks.
Yeah, that has to be one of the toughest things about being out in the streets, especially in this heat. And, of course, if somebody is trying to find a job and they can't find a place to get cleaned up, that's a big problem.
That's exactly right. And we try to position the shower in conjunction with other services that are going on at the same time. So it might be that they're doing assessments to help people get into housing.
Great.
Or it could be feeding programs, things like that.
Very nice. Another item on the list is a new homeless services app to help homeless people find services. So I guess that means they need a cell phone, but how does this work?
Yeah, that came out of our leadership team. We have a leadership program called Leadership East County. And one of our teams came up with the idea that an app would provided services directly to the homeless in a really convenient way so that they could access those services nearby would be a great help.
Nice. And so if their need is they're hungry or they need a shower or whatever it might be.
Or they're looking for housing or, you know, because a lot of times they're looking for shelter. And so they can find it that way. That app will work in a text-only format as well as a smartphone. So a lot of the homeless folks don't have smartphones, the Obama phones that they've been given. They're text-only.
Wow.
So you have to have an app that works text-only, and that's what this app would do.
Okay, very good. Another item on the list is a homeless reunification program. Is that designed to help them find lost family members?
Exactly. There's a certain percentage of homeless folks out there who do have families or relatives that they are interested in reconnecting with.
Mm-hmm.
They may have, you know, had an issue where maybe that relative didn't want them around, but maybe they've changed their mind.
They lost touch, and maybe now they've...
Yeah, so it's a unique situation, and the Salvation Army has an existing program where they do that informally. And so what we've done is really created a formal program, and we're hoping that the Salvation Army countywide will pick it up and possibly even nationwide. But they currently do assist people to get back with relatives and friends. And so we're really just playing off of the strength of that program that exists.
How successful has that been? What were some of the more dramatic stories that came out of that?
Yeah, we've reunified this year 5 people so far, and that's without any funding. So it costs about $500 a person to relocate them because there's follow-up counseling, pre-counseling, not only with the person who is looking to be reunified, but also with that destination family.
That's great.
Because we have to make sure that wherever they're going, that it's going to be a good fit and that both sides are positive about the idea.
Excellent.
And so that's really, really important.
It's really nice that you're taking a humane approach to this as opposed to some cities where it seems to be all about punitive measures. Let's just find them and, let's just go after people for basically being vagrants when there isn't any shelter space. There's
right.
no place else for them to go. So you're helping them find a place.
Well, we really believe that most people don't want to be homeless, but there are some who are, ongoing homeless
right.
and they don't want any services or any help. And those people, that may take a little more of a stick approach versus the carrot approach.
Yeah.
So we really are trying to first approach with a carrot and with incentives to get them back off of the street, get them into housing, get them into services so that if they're stuck on drugs or alcoholism, we want to help them with that. So
yeah.
that's the whole idea.
Very good. Mental illness, of course, is
Absolutely.
Another issue.
Yeah.
So another innovative idea is for the city of El Cajon and perhaps other places to hire a housing navigator. Now, what does a navigator do?
Yeah, it's an interesting name, but it really means case management. So basically people that are in a homeless situation take an assessment and it determines at what degree of risk they are currently at. And then housing navigators essentially walk those people through all of the services that they need in order to get them off the street, get them into housing, get them trained for jobs, get them off of drugs if they're having a drug
yeah.
problem or if they have a mental illness problem, to make sure that they also get services that they need.
Very good. And I understand there's also quite a number of people who wind up on the streets because they've been victims perhaps of domestic violence, battered women.
Exactly. So in that case, there's services specifically for battered women and children. Again, same thing. A housing navigator is really a case manager.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, in East County, we do not have a single housing navigator. And we've already done assessments for 200 people who are waiting for case management to help get them into the services.
Yeah, I've really always thought it kind of astounding that the county of San Diego does not have a single shelter that it operates for the homeless. Here we are, the sixth or seventh largest county in America, and they don't have a homeless shelter. The expectation seems to be that if you're homeless out in the rural areas or the suburban, urban areas in East County, that you're expected to somehow either get yourself downtown to Father Joe Carroll's place or go into a crisis house. The program in El Cajon, which does have short-term housing for everybody, and it's a wonderful program, but there's a longer-term part of it.
Yeah.
If you really want the job training, then it's a faith-based, and that's great for some people, but not everyone. And I've always thought, why isn't there a secular program someplace that anybody who needs it could go to without having to go to downtown San Diego?
Yeah, we really don't have a lot of services in the county. Most of the services are certainly concentrated in the downtown area because that's where most of the homeless folks are.
Mm-hmm.
But that said, we are starting to see and organize and coordinate much better the services that we do have. And you're mentioning the East County Transitional Living Center, which
yeah.
can handle up to 200 people at a time.
Yeah, they help a lot of people.
That's right. And that's one of our requests, is that the city consider another motel to maybe add another 200 people that we could then, in a non-religious environment, help them.
Yeah, so that's the next step,
idea.
And I think that's a very exciting one, and I understand it's something that the El Cajon City Council is taking very seriously. They're also looking at more rental assistance funds also to support Crisis House.
That's correct. So the housing navigator is one piece. The other part is to help with housing assistance to
mm-hmm.
get them into that first housing first
that's
model.
So, great program, because so many
yep.
people I've talked to who've been homeless, what you hear is once you fall into that trap, it's really hard to get out of it because the landlords want first and last month's rent and everything. And even if you've got, let's say you've got a minimum wage job, that paycheck is going to take a long time.
That's right.
Before you could ever save up enough to dig out of that hole.
And they need ongoing case management to help assist them with making sure that they are getting the job training they need so they can get jobs and get back into the mainstream of, the community and be participatory that way.
Right. A lot of them want that. They just want a break. They've just been down on their luck. And
honestly, we've got a lot of people who maybe aren't even on the street. A lot of people who are actually living in their cars. Or in their RVs, and they're homeless as well. And so there's a lot of people you don't see who are homeless as well.
That's right. Or they're couch surfing or spending a different
yep.
night at different friends.
The school system thinks there's about 2,500 homeless children in our high school district.
Yeah, that's really, really disturbing. And I've heard that it's even some of the lower level schools as well. And then the college kids also out here. I know that Grossmont and Quemack College.
Yeah, once you get out of foster care and you turn 18, then you're an adult and all of your support kind of disappears, right?
Yeah.
So the college district's definitely got a great foster program for foster children.
That's great, because
helping them out.
No child should have to choose between paying for, say, community college tuition and paying your rent and never being able to get a leg up in life, so to speak.
And if they don't go into school or they drop out of high school, a lot of those kids are ending up in our jail system, and that's not where we want them, right?
No, and really, even apart from the humanitarian aspect of just taking care of people because they're in need, isn't it actually financially better for the community also?
Much better. And that's true of the relocation program, the reunification program. You know, it's a lot more cost effective to get people into housing and that kind of stuff, because when they're out on the streets, they're using a lot of emergency services. Firemen are picking up a lot of people,
police,
taking them to hospitals, and they're doing it multiple times.
Mm-hmm.
The police are getting 60% is what I heard. 60% of the calls they get are for homelessness.
Yeah, I know that's true in La Mesa, probably is all over.
So it's a big deal.
Well, and also we talk about rising healthcare costs, but if you have somebody who is, say, diabetic on the streets, or they have frostbite in the winter, they're out there, they're more apt to be hit by a car, have injuries, you know, heat-related issues. They wind up at the emergency room a lot, and then we're all paying for that. So it just seems like at least getting them to into housing, you would avoid those kind of problems. Whatever else they may have wrong, at least you could prevent that.
Yeah, that's one of our requests we've actually asked the city, or recommended, that they consider a full-time HOT team. And a HOT team is basically a social person along with the police supporting them to make sure that the homeless folks understand that there are services available for them.
Yeah.
And that's what the HOT teams do. We've actually requested the city consider full-time HOT teams rather than just part-time.
Really nice to hear. The next issue is kind of near and dear to my heart as a dog lover. As we're recording here in the studio, my two dogs are sleeping on this hot afternoon down here. You've also included requesting 4 spaces at the animal shelter in El Cajon for dogs belonging to the homeless.
Yeah, if you're homeless and you decide I am willing to go and seek services, most places will not allow dogs. And so they won't allow their dogs to either come in with them or to go into a shelter. They don't allow dogs, and so people won't take advantage of those services if they think they're going to have to let their dog go, right?
So the idea is you could just sort of check your dog in and check your dog out if you just need him there for an afternoon or
short
morning?
Short term, yeah. So we've asked for up to 90 days.
Mm-hmm.
So if somebody's like cleaning up their act and trying to get off alcoholism or something like
Very good. Or they're in the hospital.
They need a little bit of time, right? And then if they don't come and claim their dog after the 90th day, then the shelter could take the dog and give it out to some other person.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of homeless and a lot of dogs out there with the homeless if you look around.
Right, it is. It's companionship for them.
And oftentimes that's the last, you know, positive thing they have going on in their life, you know.
Yeah,
it makes
true.
A lot of sense.
Another item is addressing the panhandling issue. I understand that there is a proposal to change signage regarding panhandling. Can you elaborate on that one?
Yeah, you know, panhandling's interesting, and it's oftentimes associated with homeless, and a lot of times the homeless are, you know, panhandling.
Right.
But not all of those people are homeless.
Well,
a lot of them live in group homes, or they're living in a house, but that's how they're making a living is by other people's
generosity. You just don't know when you see the sign.
Yeah, and the problem is that a lot of our businesses have panhandlers right in front of them, and it really disrupts their customers coming into the stores.
Mm-hmm.
And we'd really like to see that squashed.
Yeah.
And so
I understand you can't outlaw panhandling completely. There's some protections.
Yeah, but
there.
You can certainly communicate to the public that there is an alternative. And that is to support the services that support the homeless.
Yeah.
And so there are a number of great, worthy charities out there that help homeless. And if people would give their money to those services rather than giving to the people who are asking you for money, it would actually go to a better cause.
Makes sense, because you just don't know, are they going to spend it on food or housing, or are they going to spend it perhaps on drugs or alcohol or something?
Most of the time it's going into drugs and alcohol.
Yeah, unfortunately. And sometimes, as you pointed out, they may not even be homeless or in need. There are scam artists out there posing as homeless people, sadly, to collect money. So
there's a family, as an example, on Second Street, and they have kids. Mm-hmm. And their kids are very well taken care of. They go to school. They are dressed well and everything, but they're homeless. Mm-hmm. And the family, the father of the family is like, I don't want to go get a job because I'm making $600 a day out here. Why should I get a job?
Wow.
You know, so he's making $600.
Wow.
Because he puts his kids out front and people feel sorry for them because the kids are out there. And so they're giving a lot of money to them, right?
Yeah, not a good lifestyle for the children, though.
No, not a good lifestyle.
Very interesting. So as we've mentioned, listeners, this is coming up for a vote before the El Cajon City Council. We are taping this because of the holiday weekend here, so by the time you hear this, we'll know whether the El Cajon Council has actually passed it, but we understand that it looks likely to go through.
Yeah, I want to mention that El Cajon is just the first city, and we're still going to go to La Mesa, Lemon Grove, Santee, and give them reports and updates on what the task force recommendations are for each of those cities. And they each have unique needs, and so you know, we'll customize our reports a little bit.
Can you give us
also going to the county as well? So,
can you give us a couple of examples of how you might customize this, if you know it so far, in La Mesa, Lemon Grove, Santee, or the county? I believe La Mesa's next up. Is that right?
Yeah, either La Mesa or Santee. So they don't have animal shelters, so we're not going to be requesting spots for dogs, obviously. And they may or may not need a housing navigator, depending on how many homeless are in their areas.
Yeah, those areas actually don't have any housing for the homeless. Is creating some at all on your list?
Honestly, we live in San Diego where housing is scarce.
Yeah.
We really don't have a lot of housing, and that's a very serious problem here. And people don't realize that. They just love the weather, and they love the place, and they think, I'm going to live in San Diego, because if you could pick anywhere you wanted to be, wouldn't you want to be in San Diego?
Definitely.
I know I would. And so that's what's happening. And unfortunately, there's not a lot of housing. Even for renters who can afford it, they can't find places to rent, you know, right now in today's housing market. So it's very tough.
Yeah, imagine it would be particularly tough for a small city like La Mesa or Lemon Grove to do that. But what about the county of San Diego that has this vast unincorporated area and they own a lot of land? Do you think that the county can or should be doing more for the homeless?
So I know the county is going to free up a lot of funds right now for housing.
Yeah.
So it sounds like they are definitely moving in that direction. Is housing the answer? The problem is once you fill those places up, no matter how many you built, you would have more people coming because of the fact that you're providing housing. Mm. And so, unfortunately, sometimes the more services you offer, the more homeless you're going to attract.
Wow, so
and that's been proven to be true.
So what on earth is the solution then? How do we reduce the homelessness when we're in an area that happens to be blessed with wonderful weather?
I think it's kind of like trying to eat an elephant, right? You can't just eat it in one bite. You got to take a lot of different bites. Or trying to see a whole elephant up close. You can't. You know, there's too many different positions. So the whole point is you have to attack homelessness on a multitude of different approaches. And that's what we've tried to do with the task force. We've really approached it a little differently than, say, the county regional task force. So they've got kind of a top-down approach, and we've really done a bottom-up approach.
Interesting.
So we have 10 different teams, and each of those teams are making these recommendations. They're not coming from the chamber or from me.
Yeah.
They're really coming from active people who are interested in helping to stop homelessness.
Yeah, we should add, I think, as I understand it, your task force isn't just the business community, although it's wonderful that business owners are stepping up to the plate, but of course they're going to bring one perspective. You've also included nonprofits that serve the homeless and others on this, right?
Every sector of the community.
So educators.
So that's the whole idea. The whole idea about it was bring together all sectors of the community, the faith-based community, hospitals and healthcare, bring in the police and law enforcement, bring in city, management managers and management and elected officials, just regular community people that want to help. And we have a lot of those that are on the task force.
Very
over
nice.
200 people.
Wow. So that's just amazing, Eric. Yeah. What a wonderful thing you're doing there. We should also mention that the County of San Diego, the news is just out this week that they have hired a chairman for their regional task force on the homeless, which is different than the task force Eric is heading up, which is specific to East County, but the countywide one has brought in a gentleman from Utah, and his claim to fame, apparently he's gotten national attention for reducing chronic homelessness in Utah by 90%. It's phenomenal, with basically taking a housing first attitude of let's get them into housing, at least let people kind of rest and rejuvenate, and then we can worry about what other services they might need. Are you optimistic that having something like that is going to help with the problem?
Well, San Diego is different than Utah. So, you know, housing-wise especially.
True. It's a lot cheaper in Utah to provide that.
And there's a lot more housing available than there is here.
True.
And that's going to be that's still going to be our number one big issue is the housing that is available. I think, for San Diego, maybe a little different but better approach would be similar to the East County Transitional Living Centers, you know, program, where they actually help people get back on track, help them get job skills, and then help them with getting employment.
Let's talk about that a little bit. One of the things they do a lot of things, but one that's kind of interesting is they'll take folks out to a ranch or someplace out in East County, kind of a remote area, really, but it's where they're not going to be near, you know, the drug pusher or the bad influences. So they let them get clean, sober, they give them some job training skills, they'll actually bring them out and maybe have them work in a restaurant they own. They used to, when the Chargers were here, they used to go down and do vendor sales at the stadium even, which was kind of a cool thing, I think. The idea was really good. The only problem with it was that arm of the program was faith-based, so you had to be, you know, Christian of sort of an evangelical bent to take advantage of that. But I've always wondered if a similar program where anybody in need who was willing to go through that sort of thing could do that, even if they were of a different religious persuasion or no religion.
So I've had discussions with Harold Brown with the East County Transitional Living Center. He's willing to do a similar program that's not non-religious.
Wow.
So more of a 10-step type program.
Yeah. That's very interesting. So he just basically needs the funding to make it happen.
Yeah, really what we need is some housing location, preferably an old motel or an apartment building that would be adequate to help house those people and get them transitionally through the housing.
Very interesting. Now, if people want to get involved, if some of our listeners want to try to help out, is there a need for volunteers or donations?
Absolutely. We do have a lot of needs, so, and even if they just want to provide their best ideas, we welcome that. And they can reach out to our chamber office at 440-6161, and that's area code 619. And they can call and say, we would like to be added to the email list of the Homeless Task Force, and we'll make sure they stay updated as to any meetings that we have. We have 10 different teams, and we welcome anybody to join any of those teams that they find the most interesting, because there's a variety of different teams. Each team has a specific topic that they're trying to attack. Mm-hmm. An example would be short and long range housing.
Wonderful.
Another example would be reunification.
Yeah.
Another example would be services. And so those are all there.
Yeah, and it's really neat how we're seeing members of the community come forward. Also, we just had a story about the owner of Jerome's Furniture, for instance, who personally delivered a load of something like 60 mattresses out there to help homeless families at Crisis House. Or was it Crisis?
No, that was the Transitional Living Center, yeah.
Who personally delivered about 60 mattresses to help homeless families at the East County Transitional Living Center. So I would imagine, you know, when you involve the business community and the broader community at whole, there's really no limit to what you can accomplish.
And that's the whole idea of the task force is, if we can get together as a community and bring all the sectors of the community together, honestly, you can, I think, solve this problem.
Yeah.
And again, 1,000 people, that's a lot of people, but it's not that many. And I think we can solve it. If we really work together, it shouldn't be any problem.
Well, that's such an encouraging thing to hear. And listeners, if you just tuned in, we've been speaking with Eric Lund, who is the president of the San Diego East County Chamber of Commerce and the head of the East County Homeless Task Force. Eric, thank you so much for joining us today on the East County Magazine Radio Show on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice.
You bet. Thank you, Miriam.
This concludes today's episode of East County Magazine's Radio Show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County and Descanso. We extend our appreciation to our sound technician, Liz Alper, and to our producer, Miriam Raftery. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show.
Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Royalty Free Music, Kevin MacLeod, Blues 3 Music, and Pond 5. If you have story ideas or would like to underwrite the East County Magazine radio show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. We'll be back soon for another edition of East County Magazine's radio show.